This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Have you seen the new Netflix docuseries on psychedelic drugs? It's called How to Change Your Mind, based on journalist Michael Pollan's book of the same name. And it's a four-part investigation into the potential therapeutic benefits and healing properties of psychedelics. The popularity of the show prompted us to revisit a conversation we had on the subject earlier this year. Humans have been taking psychoactive drugs for, well, since humans have been around. But more recently, those drugs, such as LSD and psilocybin from mushrooms, have been studied by scientists for use in the treatment of anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. In recent years, there's been a renewed interest in the mental health benefits of these drugs, and some states are working to decriminalize them. Here in Illinois, State Representative LaShawn Ford, a Democrat from Chicago, is working on legislation that would decriminalize at least plant-based psychedelics and allow counselors and religious healers to use the drugs therapeutically. A little later, we'll talk with two researchers in this area, but first, we're going to hear from two people who have experience using psychedelics for healing. Justin Wigg, a veteran of the United States Marine Corps, has used psychedelics to treat issues related to anger and post-traumatic stress disorder. Also, Ajuni joined us for this conversation. Because of the stigma around this issue, we agreed to use just their first name. Ajuni is an artist who's had positive experiences using psychedelics to heal from a trauma. We spoke with these guests in May of this year. Because the conversation is on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought. Email talk@21stshow.org. Justin, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Ajuni, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you so much. It's an honor.
So, Justin, I want to begin with you. I understand you traveled to Peru for a specific treatment that's not legal in the U.S. Before we get into your experience there, though, talk about what led up to your decision to make that trip.
Sure. So I've struggled with some depression and anger issues and the types of things that I think a lot of people think are just normal. And they struggle with them every day. And it really happened about a little over a year ago. My serious girlfriend moved in with me. I went for an MRI and had a super, super uncomfortable experience with that. And it led to this big explosion. And it was this like breakthrough moment that I knew that like something was wrong, that I needed some real help. I had adjusted fairly well compared to a lot of my friends, a lot of my veteran, colleagues, struggled with a lot worse issues. And, I thought I was doing pretty well. It was that breakthrough, kind of this explosive, anger emotion from, what should have been, just a normal conversation with somebody I loved. And that was when I knew I really needed some help. And, I found an organization called Heroic Hearts Project. I had tried to, treat my issues with pharmaceuticals from the VA in the past. And, if anything, it probably made things worse. So I was open to other things, heard about ayahuasca, found this organization, like I said, called Heroic Hearts Project. And they helped me get down to Peru.
What were your expectations going into this trip and this experience?
I really tried to not have too high of expectations. Plant medicine is an area in which you don't really have control. One of the things that they say, with hallucinogens, like you don't have to believe, it's going to make you see what you need to see. Even during my experience down there, I did struggle with expectations, despite trying to keep those in check ahead of time. I tried to go in with an open mind and, let the experience, happen as it needed to.
Can you describe the sensations you felt, particularly from drinking this ayahuasca?
Sure. It's definitely hard to explain. I think the analogy that I've come up with that best describes it is probably Alice in Wonderland meets Fantasia. you know, if you haven't done anything similar before, it's kind of hard to describe, but certainly if you've seen those movies, you can get a little bit of a sense of where those ideas came from with hallucinogens.
And what was the effect like on your anger, on the PTSD?
You know, I struggled through a couple of the first ceremonies, but there was a particular moment in which I asked the spirit of the plant to help me fix that particular issue. And it was like a snap of a fingers, and all of a sudden, like my, like this, all that built up tension and anger was just gone. And that's not to say that, you know, my everyday life experiences in the last, you know, 6 months haven't, started adding back to that bank, but I've certainly come away with some tools to help, you know, keep that in check and keep it from boiling over.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Junie, I want to bring you into the conversation now. I understand psychedelics have helped you heal from some very difficult experiences in your life, particularly in your childhood. Can you talk about your relationship to psychedelics as they relate to healing?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much, Justin, for sharing your story. And thank you, Brian, for creating the space. My story is unique to me. I didn't even know that I was going to go on it. But when I was about 21, I actually, with the help of another medicine, with the help of cannabis, I came to realize that as a child, and I'm going to offer a trigger warning for the listeners here, that I experienced, or I was abused sexually by my dad. And my dad, previous to that, had been my best friend growing up and still is an incredible man, but who was capable, and I didn't even understand how, of really atrocious and horrible and harming things. So when I was 21, that pretty much shattered my entire world apart, because I didn't understand that my brain could have kept something like that from me. I didn't understand that my dad could have done something like that. And I didn't understand that my society or my family or my community could have let that happen or not recognized it or not supported me in figuring it out. So I went on a very hard 10-year journey of thinking I was crazy, of being really upset, being really angry, and being very closed off. I used to be a really, really social person, and I kind of went into a cocoon for a long time until I met my dog, who saved my life, Isaiah, and she's sitting next to me. The first time that I heard about psychedelic therapy was when I went to a trauma conference on the East Coast. And as soon as I got back to Chicago, I hit up some of these Chicago psychedelic communities that I was hearing about. And at my very first meeting, I met somebody who became a really, really close friend of mine. And that person was also a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. More importantly, in my healing journey, they were also a perpetrator of childhood sexual abuse. And they had spent about 13 years in prison. And they had also spent a lot of time outside of prison working with medicines, doing very, very deep healing work. So it got to the place where it was safe for me to have a really close friendship with that person. And together, they helped me explore and understand the cycles of abuse. And we offered each other some really amazing healing and insight. Because most people who perpetrate abuse are also abusers. I've never met somebody who hasn't been. And it's also very rare to find somebody that in some form or another hasn't experienced abuse. So I am so excited today to be able to say that my name's Junie and I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse by my dad, because that's something that like 12 years ago, I could never have ever done. And so I'm really excited to finally say, like, it's not my secret to keep, and I've done my work to understand, and with the help of psychedelics that can break down that biology of barrier, where when we're young, you know, we go through things and our brain understands that we don't have the safety to process it in that moment, you know, based on where we are when we experience it, based on who our family is or what supports we have or what resources they have. And so we shut it down, and our body learns how to shut it down. for a very long time until it has the space to heal. And for me, psychedelic spaces, and especially the community we have in Chicago, is just incredible. And people like Jeff, and so many others who are working to make that space somewhere that people can truly go and claim the healing that is going to make their lives better and is going to make that abuse stop. I mean, I'm just so grateful. Like, I have tears in my eyes. I'm just so grateful for this community. Sure. And
Jeff, Jeff sorry, is someone, yeah, go ahead. No, I say Jeff is someone we'll introduce in a moment who's going to be joining us later in the conversation. But Junie, I just want to, that's a lot to carry and share. Thank you for sharing your story with us. How do you understand the, you know, how much of it is the group that, of people who are on these similar journeys with you? How much of it is the psychedelics? How do you attribute that?
Yeah, I always say that, like, psychedelics so much helped me on my journey, but so did friends. Like, so did my friends, so did my dog, so did nature. And so I think that, like, what I try to stay away from is ever saying that, like, psychedelics are the answer, go do all the psychedelics. Because even for me, like, I love psychedelics, they've helped me so much, but I'm still very wary and cautious every time I'm going to go to a journey, because I want to make sure I'm being called there. And I think that's a really important relationship to have with the plants and with the medicines, is that, if you're seeking healing, like, the way that it's going to come to you is the way it's going to come to you. And that's really important. And the community around psychedelics, like, I can go, and I did before I went into it, my first ceremony, I experienced mushrooms on my own, and that was amazing and magical and healing. But to have a supportive community, it just changes everything, because your psyche, having that containership, allows you to go to a different place. It allows things to come up that we need healing community for. And I think that's something that probably a while ago, a long time ago, we had more access to. And now, as people are more isolated, we need that. We truly need that. And so psychedelics in partnership with community are just, like chef's kiss. Like, it's just amazing what you're able to do with that kind of support.
Justin, I wonder, how have people around you responded? Maybe especially those who have no experience with psychedelics, or maybe even are skeptical about them.
That's a great question. And I just want to say thank you to Ajuni for sharing as well. That is a lot to carry. And it just goes to show the breadth of healing that plant medicine can do from our completely different experiences. And very similar outcomes. I would say the people around me have noticed a difference, and a lasting difference. I know that I went to a jungle for a week, and it was a lot, but certainly same thing with mushrooms. There's a lot of research that shows a single dose of mushrooms, the effects last up to a year.
And Ajuni, what about you? Were there skeptics in your life, or people who have, you've had to sort of bring along in some ways?
Yeah, I think I'm still one of them. Like, sometimes, like, my ego is such a strange thing. I can still say, well, that didn't really happen. And so I think to overcome, like, even my own self-doubt. And I think to, like, actually for me, I think what happened is that it created such profound experiences that I could no longer, like, have conversations with people that, like, weren't willing to, I don't know, I guess it just, like, helped me understand, like, who I felt comfortable truly talking to and sharing myself with. So I still kind of, I'm a little careful about how I talk about it, but I think maybe after this show I'll be less so, because I'm really confident about what happened and, like, what is happening to me and all the people that are in this community. And I would love to be less stigmatized about it, and conversations like this are what help.
Well, Ajuni and Justin, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the show today to share your experiences.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
And I want to introduce, we need to take a break in a few minutes, but before we do, I want to introduce our next guests, who are Dr. Harriet DeWitt, a professor of psychiatry and behavioral neuroscience who's been researching psychoactive drugs for 40 years. She runs the Human Behavioral Pharmacology Laboratory at the University of Chicago, which investigates the effects of psychoactive drugs on volunteers. Professor DeWitt, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Also joining us is Dr. Jeff Baichi, professor at Adler University and a psychologist at the Sana Healing Collective, which consults with people who use psychedelics. Professor Beth Baichi, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Harriet DeWitt, I want to begin with you. How did you first get interested in studying the effects of psychoactive drugs?
I've been studying drugs that have some potential to be used for non-medical purposes. That's a long way to say recreational drugs for many years. But most of the drugs that I've studied are like alcohol or cannabis or nicotine or caffeine. And only recently have I gotten interested in these more illicit drugs like MDMA and LSD. And I've gotten interested because they're sort of an extension of the other drugs that we study. So the MDMA, for example, is very much like stimulant drugs like amphetamine. And so I was very interested to see how the MDMA is different from other stimulants. And then LSD was, again, something that there's a lot of mystery involved with it. And I have the resources and background to study that under very controlled conditions. So my interest is really curiosity.
And Jeff, just about a minute before we need to take a break, but what about you? What's your origin story for getting interested in natural psychedelics and how it informs the work you do today?
Yeah, strangely enough, I've kind of always had some awareness and interest just because my parents grew up in a time when it was still legal in the 1960s and were pretty open about their positive experiences they had with psychedelics. And then when I took one of my first master's level classes, a professor offhandedly mentioned a drug named Ibogaine that people think could help people get away from opiate addictions in a single use. And that was pretty intriguing to me, given what I'd already heard about it. And then as it became more popular as a harm reductionist, as somebody who does drug safety, I was kind of concerned that adequate safety nets weren't in place. And so with some colleagues, we started a community group to do kind of harm reduction and safety and community building for people who use psychedelics. And that was the group that Ajuni referenced earlier.
Oh. Okay, we're going to continue this conversation after a short break. This is the 21st Show. More to come. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're going to continue with our conversation recorded in May on the study of psychedelics for use in treating certain mental health disorders such as depression and people experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder. For this part of the conversation, we're speaking with Dr. Harriet DeWitt, professor of psychiatry and behavioral neuroscience, who's been researching psychoactive drugs for 40 years. She runs the Human Behavioral Pharmacology Lab at the University of Chicago. And also with us was Dr. Jeff Baichi, professor at Adler University and psychologist at the Sana Healing Collective, which consults with people who use psychedelics. You are going to hear us take some calls. That was from when we first had this conversation back in May. We're not taking calls today, but you can let us know what you thought in real time on Twitter at 21st Show. Harriet DeWitt, can you talk about a little more about the psychoactive drugs that you've been studying in the lab? You mentioned, I think, MDMA and LSD.
We've done a series of studies both with MDMA and LSD. And I just want to say that I come to this research very much from the point of view of a psychopharmacologist and an experimental psychologist. So we're really interested in the effects of the pharmacological effects of the drugs without expectancies. So we administer these doses of drugs to people or placebo under conditions where they don't know what they're getting. So we tell them they might get any one of a number of different types of drugs, including placebo and including the drug that they actually get. And of course, this addresses an issue that plagues the area of psychedelic research, that is how to control for expectancies. So in our studies, we go out of our way so that to minimize people, that people will expect to get particular effects from a particular drug. And we're just looking at how it affects their mood, how it affects their behavior, and sometimes their physiology as well. So we've done a series of studies. So what is it that MDMA does to our sort of psychological constructs in a way that might facilitate psychotherapy, for example, or makes people help to make progress with their problems? And then on the LSD side, the only research that I've done with LSD has been with microdosing. So this is a little bit different from, or it's actually quite different, except for the drug that's involved, from the high dose trip doses that people use in therapeutic settings. So I'm interested in whether these very small doses of LSD taken repeatedly change either psychiatric symptoms or creativity or cognitive performance. So those are kind of the two areas of research that I've been involved in.
And what sort of effects do you see on healthy people who take these drugs?
Well, interestingly, the MDMA has one finding that we've found consistently across studies. It is that it makes people less sensitive to negative emotional stimuli. So somehow it makes you less reactive to, say, we show people, for example, pictures of angry faces or fearful faces or threatening faces, and we ask them at what point do they detect the emotion, and it decreases their sensitivity to negative emotions. And you could imagine, in a sense, that that would help in a psychotherapeutic situation where they're talking with a therapist, and somehow their fear of kind of negative evaluation is reduced. So that's one of the findings. So that's the kind of thing that we're doing, is looking for sort of psychological constructs that the drug acts on that then might have benefits therapeutically.
Jeff, I wonder if you can talk about some of these things. We heard from, I think you were listening earlier when Justin was on, talking about drinking ayahuasca in Peru and described it sort of like Fantasia the metaphor is escaping. Oh, Alice in Wonderland, I think, is what he said. We just heard Professor DeWitt talking about, using much, much smaller doses. What sort of work are you doing with the Sauna Healing Collective?
Yeah, I very much appreciate Professor DeWitt's work. And I'm a little bit more on the applied side, so I think the two of us together cover this pretty well. So I do research on the mental health, medicinal use of psychedelics. I am a policy advocate for drug policy reform. And then through Sauna Healing Collective, we provide support for people to process their psychedelic experiences, but we also more proactively provide ketamine-assisted therapy so people can come in and have the whole process with us, from preparation to having a psychedelic experience with this drug ketamine to processing it afterwards. So kind of do the whole spectrum.
And I think we have a caller, if he's still on the line. Mario was calling in from Springfield to talk about his experience with ketamine. That's good timing. Mario, are you with us? And thank you for calling
in. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead, please. So I understand you've experienced ketamine treatment.
Yeah, so I had 6 treatments with ketamine through the course of 2 weeks. I think that ketamine has eliminated my some of my symptoms. My hand doesn't shake. The pain has been reduced. I'm certainly more calm, but I really still feel on the edge. I still feel very fearful. And my question to your experts would be: is there a difference between the ketamine treatment that I had than just using regular mushrooms? My cousin, he's a doctor, and that's what he says: just drop the ketamine and just eat some mushrooms. And I don't just want to do something like that. I want to know what they want to have to say.
Okay, thank you for the call, Mario. We appreciate it, Dr. Baichi. I wonder what your perspective is on that.
Yeah, so it's really important that the effect of any drug, but especially psychedelics, is a product of drug set and setting is what it's called. And so it's not just the drug or the biological effect, but it's what settings and what context you're using it in, what kind of support you have, like if you have a therapist or not. And unfortunately, a lot of the ketamine clinics do not include therapy. And so I think they're missing a big component when they do that. It kind of over-relies just on the biological effects of the drug without helping you know how to psychologically maximize those to give you support when you're feeling on edge and to know what to do with that. And so what you're saying is a pretty common thing that I hear when people don't always have the psychological support that they need. And then the setting. So like what's the environment like of the office setting where you're giving the treatment? That's all going to be part of the experience too. And so I always encourage people don't get too hung up on what the molecule is. I think in the end, even though these drugs are being researched for different purposes, they're probably all going to be found to be very effective for a whole range of healing purposes. And it's much more about the set and setting. So it's like how you approach it and what your supports are around the psychedelic experience that impact it.
Harriet DeWitt, without us signing up for like a graduate level class in psychopharmacology, can you briefly help us understand what is working differently about these types of drugs as opposed to, you know, the antidepressants or, you know, other, you know, more, I guess you'd say mainstream or accepted, you know, medicine that physicians have been using for decades now?
Well, it's a huge question. And unfortunately, in psychiatry, we find that some drugs work and we don't always know why. Of the drugs that have been mentioned, for example, ketamine is known to have its action by quite a different mechanism than, say, LSD or even MDMA. And so you could expect that it might produce a different kind of profile of effects, or it might be effective for different kinds of things. And it's one of the few drugs that is now accepted in medical practice. So in that way, it makes it more accessible and in some ways safer. So a lot of the drugs that are available on the street, they might have some of the active ingredient, but they might also have other constituents that you'd want to be careful about. So you're asking, what are the underlying mechanisms that produce these effects? Honestly, we don't know. There are shared mechanisms, the antidepressants and LSD, and for that matter, MDMA, all work on the serotonin receptors, but they might act on them in different ways and then have different consequences. So there are some shared mechanisms between traditional antidepressant drugs or drugs used in medical practice and these more exploratory applications of psychedelic drugs. But honestly, we don't know the details. It keeps us busy.
Sure. Well, let me just take a moment to remind listeners we're speaking with Harriet DeWitt from the University of Chicago and Jeff Baichi of Adler University and the Sauna Healing Collective about psychedelic drugs and the increasing research and interest in using them to treat mental health issues like anxiety and anger and PTSD, that sort of thing, depression as well. Jeff, I understand you are advocating for change in the law. I mentioned some work that's happening on legislation with Representative LaShawn Ford. What can you talk about what you're advocating for?
Yeah, there's a group of drug policy reformers that are working with Representative LaShawn Ford to put together a bill based on some bills that have been passed or that are in progress in other states. So Oregon passed a psilocybin services initiative to set up a framework, first to set up an advisory panel that would look at all the research and then make recommendations about how to safely and effectively create a psilocybin services system. And so that would include like what training people would need to be facilitators of those experiences, to, you know, what regulations are needed for all the manufacturing and that sort of thing as well. And so then that's a major part of the bill. And then the other major part would involve decriminalizing a range of psychedelic substances. So just as you heard the experiences earlier of your first two guests, we criminalize those experiences that people are attempting to get healing. And even if there may be risks, we think that criminalizing that behavior is not a fair or effective way of reducing risks.
Jeff, I also wanted to ask you if what would you say to people who are anxious about, you know, trying a treatment like this, but, you know, maybe they would benefit from it based on your experience, but there can be a lot of anxiety about, you know, something that's going to make you sort of lose control of your mind.
Yeah, I think that's one of the primary fears that people have. And so fear of their own mind, fear of not having control over their mind. And so I think that's a healthy fear that a lot of people bring into the experience and hopefully prevents people from doing these things in environments and in contexts where it's not safe or they don't have good support. But yeah, when we prepare people for ketamine treatments, that's an important part of it, is helping them address those fears and feel like they're ready and in a place where they can get a therapeutic benefit from it. I do think psychedelics in general are a common psychological mechanism that they have, is that they're really good disruptors. So they're good at disrupting the patterns and the cycles that we get stuck in, whether that's our defenses or emotional patterns or thought patterns or behavioral patterns. And so that's why I think they're good and can be helpful for a wide range of issues that people bring to therapy, is that they're good at kind of temporarily disrupting the patterns that we're stuck in and allowing us to try out some new directions and some new ways of seeing things.
Just about a minute left in our conversation. Professor DeWitt, I wonder what you think about this potential to decriminalize and make this sort of more widely available as a sort of treatment.
Well, I think we need to step carefully. I think there's definitely potential. It should be punished with criminal consequences. But we do need to regulate in the sense of limiting access to people who should have access, and then controlling the environments where it's used. So, of course, we don't want young people to have access. We don't want people who have serious psychiatric problems to have access to it, in the sense that they might use it under uncontrolled conditions. And we want there to be some kind of medical or therapeutic oversight, I would say, just to make these are powerful drugs, and they could be just detrimental to the people themselves. And there are risks and to society more generally. We learned in the 60s and 70s how things could go wrong, and we don't want that to happen again.
Well, I suspect this is not the last time we'll be talking about this topic on our show. It's an issue we will continue to follow in the months and years ahead. I want to thank Professor Harriet DeWitt of the University of Chicago and Professor Jeff Baichi of Adler University and the Sauna Healing Collective. Thank you both so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. It was interesting to hear from everybody. Thank you.
And that's all the time we have for today. Visit our website, where you can let us know what you thought about our program and suggest future topics. Our email address is there. We also have a voicemail number, and you can find our Twitter account. You can also subscribe to our podcast or find us anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify. Just search for The 21st. The 21st Show is produced by Jose Zepeda, Christine Hatfield, and Aiden Choate. Today's segments were originally produced by Anna Casey and Erica Scalise. Our intern is Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Steve Mork and Jason Croft. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.